The year is 85 AD. Jerusalem in 70 AD has been utterly destroyed by the Roman Empire, leveled to the ground. Jewish people have been dispersed throughout all of the known world. And in Palestine, Jewish Christians, to whom Matthew's congregation was part, are trying to understand their place and their role, especially in relationship to the synagogues that have been set up by the Pharisees. And so many of the teachings of Jesus and the way they're recorded in Matthew's gospel, 50 years after the resurrection of Jesus, reflect that struggle. Hear then these words from the 23rd chapter of Matthew. Then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat. Therefore, do whatever they teach you and follow it. But do not do as they do, for they do not practice what they teach. They tie up heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on the shoulders of others, but they themselves are unwilling to lift a finger to move them. They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long. They love to have the place of honor at banquets and the best seats in the synagogues and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have people call them rabbi. But you are not to be called rabbi, for you have one teacher and you are all students. And call no one your father on earth, for you have one father, the one in heaven. Nor are you to be called instructors, for you have one instructor, the Messiah. The greatest among you will be your servant. All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all who humble themselves will be exalted." May God give us understanding of this passage of the teachings of Jesus and the struggles of the early church. This is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now I know, you're looking at the bulletin and you're saying, Reverend Robinson misspelled that word, reflection, with an X. Now I know that's not the way that the action reflection method is often spelled, before you point it out. But action reflection usually relates to a process of having an action or an experience and then reflecting upon it objectively, thus learning from it. Now that is spelled the other way, with a C. Jesus used this sometimes in his teachings, this action reflection model that we're used to. Other times, though, he wanted faith to become a reflex. Okay, reflexion. Wow, it must be early. Time change. But he wanted the people, his disciples, to have a reflex of having a situation occur and then reflexively responding with compassion and selfless care that faith only could generate for them. And that's a consistent theme in the teachings and the actions of the prophets of God's people. Last Friday evening, Honoree and I were deeply blessed to enjoy another of our interfaith connections as we went to a dinner and a special once a month everyone participates type of Shabbat service at Temple Neve Shalom in Metuchen. It was enormous fun. And during this service, the children were singing, sometimes very loudly into the microphone as the cantor held it out to them. Toddlers were rolling all over the floors in front of the bima. There was a lot of energy after having a big meal, and probably a lot of Halloween candy. But another highlight for us, particularly, was listening to a very sincere reflection by our friend Rabbi Eric Rosen, especially his retelling of a story about the prophet Elijah. And the story he told went something like this. There was a very pious and faithful Jewish man who died. And he was so pious and so wonderful, God took special notice and decided to reward his piety by giving one wish, a wish for absolutely anything, to each of his three sons. And so God told the prophet Elijah to go and to give them each this special gift. So Elijah went to the first son and asked him, what is your wish for absolutely anything? I wish to be rich, very, very rich and powerful. And Elijah said, okay. And the next day, a boot appeared, and the boot was filled with gold coins. And each time the man emptied out the boot, it would fill back up again with gold coins. And before long, he was the wealthiest and most powerful man anywhere around. The second son was also given a wish, and he said, I want to be the smartest man on earth. Elijah said, okay. And he received a book, but it was a special book because whenever someone asked him a question and he opened the book, a question about anything in the book was the correct answer. And so he became known as being the smartest man anyone had ever known. Elijah then went to the third son, too, and asked him what, if he could have anything at all, he would wish for. Well, the third son said, I really have no material needs, and things are going pretty well for me, so I guess I would just wish to be very happy. And Elijah said, okay. But by the next day, nothing special had happened for this son, and he had been very happy anyway, and now he was still feeling happy. So he thought, well, good, okay, I'm good with that. But later that day, there was an older man who knocked at his door and said that his wagon had broken and asked if he could stay overnight in the barn until his wagon could be fixed the next day. And the son happily said, well, certainly, but not in the barn. Come and share my home for this evening. And the man was very appreciative, and he also had with him his daughter. And so they stayed that evening, and together they ate and they drank and they told stories and had a delightful time, and they were just laughing and laughing. And so on the next day, this third son went out to fix the wagon, and he did, almost fixed it, but not completely, so that they had to then stay another night. And so the man and his daughter stayed another night. They had a wonderful time together. The next day, likewise, he went out to fix the wagon, and it somehow was more difficult than he had imagined, and so he couldn't completely repair the wagon, so they had to stay over. And you see where this is going, right? So by the third day, the son had asked for her father's blessing for her hand in marriage because he was so taken with the daughter. And so they wed, and she and her father moved in, and they all lived together happily with this happy son. A time passed, and the prophet Elijah decided he really wanted to find out how these wishes had worked out. So he put on a disguise as a poor beggar, and he knocked on the door of the rich and powerful son. I'm in great need, he said to the rich, powerful son. Could you help me with a bit of food or a little bit of help? Well, what do you think? The rich son replied. I will not give you anything, for I have worked very, very hard for everything that I have. Whereupon a shocked prophet Elijah cast off his disguise and proclaimed, you have not worked hard for all these riches and power, for they were a gift from God. Therefore, I will take them from you. And so the man had all of his power and riches taken away. Elijah went to the second son, who was now renowned for his intelligence and his knowledge, so much so he was surrounded every day by the greatest thinkers and learned students of his time. Disguised as a potential student, Elijah then knocked on his door and asked if he could study with this very knowledgeable man. Why, no, why? Why should I take you on when I'm surrounded by already so many learned, intelligent ones and students? I've worked so hard to accumulate this knowledge. And Elijah flung off his disguise and he said, you have not worked hard for this knowledge. It was a gift from God. I thus will take it back from you. And he lost all of the knowledge and all of his learned connections. Going on now, greatly discouraged by these two failures, Elijah went to the home of the third son, who had this loving wife and this very grateful father-in-law, and he knocked on the door, disguised as a weary and impoverished traveler. And Elijah said to her, I am lost, sir, and night is approaching. May I sleep in your barn until morning and then find my way? Whereupon the third son said, no, you may not sleep overnight in my barn. But you will come inside and will be warm and safe, and you will enjoy my hospitality and be included in the joy of my family. And Elijah then removed his disguise, and he said, as you have fulfilled the gift that has been given to you, I will give you more. And he gave to him the boot and the book. And the third son continued to live happily, which was his miraculous gift to begin with, for this was a gift that truly, truly honored God, the giver. I'm truly thankful to Rabbi Rosen for his telling of this story of Elijah the prophet, and with my apologies for any detours or embellishments that I may have taken in my recollection of it. But as I heard him tell this tale, I immediately was thinking of another teacher who was more than once thought of to be the prophet Elijah returned. And this was, of course, the teacher that we know as Jesus. In our text from Matthew's Gospel this morning, one that Tuesday morning we had a very rich discussion about this passage at Panera Bread, Jesus seems to be, in his words, very harshly critical of the Pharisees. But remember the passage. The first thing he says is, listen to what they say and follow what they tell you to do. Listen to them and follow what they teach you and tell you to do. For Jesus rightly points out that they, the Pharisees, occupy the seat of Moses. And that means they were the keepers of the Torah. And it was so important to recognize the deep validity of their Pharisaic teachings for all the Jewish people, including the Jewish Christians. But Jesus also pointed out that many of them were wearing, as he put, broad, very large and noticeable phylacteries. And a phylactery was a leather box that they would have on foreheads or on their arms that had pieces of the Torah inside of them, and overly large so they could be easily seen by others, and likewise overly large fringes, prayer tassels from their garments. Now, Jesus is not criticizing those practices, for those are faithful acts of religious discipline and pious faith. He was honoring that. The point is not that people should refrain from practicing their religious tradition, but that the motivation should be to inspire and nurture their own faithfulness, not primarily just to be noticed by others. For as Jesus has often said, that is its own reward. And the cryptic statement that the last will be first and the first will be last then starts to make sense. When we start to see that our gifts from God, whatever they are, whether they are our talents or our prayers for each other or our faith or leadership or compassion or organizing or hope or honest critique given in love, whatever our gifts from God, if we use them as a way to honor and serve God, then they are true gifts that we have received. And we don't put ourselves then up front saying, hey, look at me, look at my gifts. But instead, we keep giving thanks for the gifts that we have been given to share. And we keep asking ourselves, how can we best fulfill and honor God in the way that we use all of those gifts? So in whatever measure that we may be rich or powerful or moderately rich or moderately powerful or relatively rich or relatively powerful, we need to thank God for our gifts and seek to honor not ourselves, but the giver of all gifts. And in whatever measure we may be intelligent or talented, we also need to thank God for that gift and to honor not ourselves, but the giver of all gifts. And should we be blessed to have happiness in our lives, or even blessed to have a deep yearning for happiness in our living in difficult times, then we can thank God for the gift of life and seek to honor God and not ourselves. For then, even if we meet another in need, or even if we are the one in need, the joy we receive in the sharing can be genuine. So friends, the point of this passage is not Jesus criticizing faithful Jewish practices, not at all. But I think it's more in line with the chorus of that song that we learned this morning. Nobody wants to play rhythm guitar behind Jesus. Everybody wants to be the lead singer in the band. Isn't that sometimes true? In a rather odd way, I think that this song by the Oak Ridge Boys is really saying the same thing as Elijah the prophet in his story and Jesus in the Gospels. God gives us the gifts to use, that God is the lead singer in the band, and the melody comes from God. And when we get in front of the lead singer in the band, all too often it's our own voice that we wind up following, and not that of the divine will. We are called to be the backup band, but look who's out front singing. It is God. And the flip side to this matter is sometimes we're so taken with being the rhythm guitar section, we don't even bother to worry about having a melody line, do we? We just strum away at chords without any particular message or tune, just like I did with the kids down here earlier, right? You should have seen their faces. And while it may keep us busy, it doesn't do much to honor God to just be making the background noise. So I think the best advice that we have is what we heard earlier from the prophet Micah, who famously encouraged us, all of us, to do justice, to love kindness, to walk humbly with our God. Because in that rather angry text in the chapter 3 of Micah, that prophet told us in unvarnished terms that we are not to follow ways and instructions that are self-serving, that ignore the real issues of justice, the true needs of peace. But for us as Christians, Jesus' Beatitudes follow right in the footsteps of Micah and of Elijah, making compassion to the poor central, pursuing peace on behalf of those who are powerless, mandatory, daring to be vulnerable in the midst of mourning, walking in solidarity with those who hunger and thirst for justice denied them simply because they are different or foreign or not connected, because these are the things that God wants of faithful disciples. It is very, very true that in our culture today, in our times, even in our own communities, we can find a religious message that will fit and will affirm and will pat us all on the back. Any religious melody that we're already singing, we can follow. But aren't we called instead to be the rhythm section for the melody that God, as the lead singer, is singing, and not the other way around? I hope we can use the richness and the power that is fairly abundant in our community, in our hands, that we can use the intelligence and knowledge that comes with our place in this world, that we can use the true and deep happiness that God's ways have called us to live. And then we can, with hearts of compassion, with minds of conviction, and with souls of embrace, truly follow and honor God. Action, reflection, a challenge, a spiritual gift faithful response. Elijah could be knocking on our door at any time. Let's be ready. Amen.